Overweight police officer Jim Germanakos once secretly wondered if his weight would be the indirect cause of a partner's injury or possibly even death on the job. The season 4 at-home winner on NBC's The Biggest Loser shares his tale from a heavy officer to proponent of the physically fit force. If you're not familiar with the hit NBC reality show, The Biggest Loser features obese contestants attempting to lose weight in a contest for cash prizes and to lose the highest percentage of weight to become the biggest loser. If you're not familiar with the hit NBC reality show, The Biggest Loser features obese contestants attempting to lose weight in a contest for a cash prize, to lose the highest percentage of weight to become the biggest loser. Jim's journey is chronicled, as well as his tips to officers on how to maintain a healthy weight on the job, in the October 2010 issue of Law Enforcement Technology Magazine. Jim's joining us today from his New York home to talk about his experience on the Weight Loss TV program and share his battle with the bulge, as well as tackle some questions on officer health and fitness. Hi, Jim. Thanks for joining us. Just to kick things off, do you want to give the real short Reader's Digest version of your Biggest Loser experience?
All right. Well, you know, in my life as a police officer and as a volunteer fireman and you know, I'm very involved with the kids. I coach three sports, and I'm a Boy Scout leader. You know, I was always very busy for everybody else. I was never very busy for myself. And although I exercised, I spent a lot of time lifting weights, and I thought I knew. You know, I actually thought I felt good and everything, but then I'd watch the Biggest Loser, and I'd say to myself, you know what, if I just gave myself 6 months, you know, for myself, to give myself a couple hours a day and really get down to nitty-gritty, I'm sure I could probably get my health and my fitness back. What I didn't know and what I didn't have was the education or the re-education that we eventually got, which would allow me to know exactly what to do and how to do it, which is available to everybody if you just do a little research. So what I did was I actually went to the open call audition, and they liked me. It was in New York, so I didn't mind being New York-y with my Brooklyn accent and my, you know, my gold chain with my crucifix that everybody saw all mm-hmm. season long on me. You know, and just kind of was myself. And they liked me, and I did some follow-up interviews and some pictures. And then they invited me to come. When they invited me to come, I said, too bad I couldn't get my twin brother involved. And they said, you have a twin? And I said, yeah. They said, is he a cop too? And I said, no, he's a businessman. You know, he's a white-collar guy. And they said, perfect. Send us a picture. So that's how I got Bill involved. And Bill went on, of course, to win the season. And, you know, it's funny how being in the right place at the right time worked out this way. I mean, this was best-case scenario for us as a team. Of course, I would have liked to bring home the big cash and get the title, but I can revel in the fact that I lost more weight and percentage than him. Plus, I managed to bring home a couple bucks and pay some bills. So, like I said, it was a blessing. And the first few hours with Jillian, and after speaking to the doctors and nutritionists and psychologists and everything there, you realize what you really have to do when you first start on a health and fitness plan is to figure out what your underlying problems and issues are. And that's we tell that to people a lot when they ask us what they should do. That we speak to many people who are helpless. They think that they're hopeless, but they just sort of, you know, you get into a rut because they don't see the scale change 30 pounds overnight. So, you know, they get dejected. But you have to remember, it went on slow and it's going to come off slow. And the most important thing about being obese and trying to figure out exactly how to help yourself is, when you go to see your doctor and you're telling me that you want to get on a diet and exercise plan, then you have to get your referral to the psychologist and the nutritionist and the personal trainer. And those people are all usually covered in your benefits, you know, in your medical coverage. And the most important one out of all of them is the psychologist. You have to figure out what your issues are and why you turn to food. And
and now you were the season 4 at-home winner on The Biggest Loser. Right. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. What does that mean?
Well, the way the show works is you get a certain amount of people. Our season was 18 individuals that were broken up into three groups of six teams. Three teams of six people. And at first, in your weightless competition, you lose weight as a team. And if your team loses the weigh-in, meaning that you lose the least amount of weight, then they are able to vote somebody off. Even though I lost the most weight up until that point, my team, when they got a chance to break my brother and I up, they sent me home claiming that I was the biggest threat, which ends up being right because I lost more weight and percentage than anybody on the season. Matter of fact, I had the record for a while out of anybody, out of any at-home contestant, and there was only one person that beat me out of the first seven seasons in percentage, and that was Eric Chopin, the season three winner, who was actually, you know, on the campus for 17 weeks with Jillian.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is after a few weeks, the three teams become all individuals again, and then you can protect yourself by losing the most amount of weight. And on the show, what they have is they have a scoreboard, and there's a yellow line. The two people who lose the least amount of weight go fall below the yellow line, and then one of them gets voted off. Well, when I went home after week five on season four, I started training at home, and all the people that ended up coming home, which ended up being 14 people, we all compete for the second place prize, which is called the at-home championship. And that's the one where they want to see if you can take what you learned on the campus and then continue at home. And whoever loses the most weight and percentage of weight at home then wins. I won $100,000 and I became the at-home champion. So my brother and I, we swept the prizes, even though it wasn't a team show, it was an individual show. We came in first and second. And then the season after us, they started having teams. That's the way we went about winning.
Okay. You talked about that how you were eliminated after week five and you went home and had to continue your weight loss. What was it like returning home and also to work?
Well, you have to imagine, any cop or fireman in the country can imagine that I had a lot of guys that were giving me the rib, you know, that were, hey, you know what, you left, you know, you went through all this, you're on TV standing, you know, with no shirt on and your underwear in front of 25 million people.
Mm-hmm.
They're all, you know, busting my shoes, and mm-hmm. I came home after being on TV and organizing my schedule to possibly be gone for you know, 17 weeks, and I was home after 5 weeks. So I took a lot of crap, and it was all good, though. You know, they don't bust your shoes unless they like you, and
mm-hmm.
there's only a couple guys that throw in a little elbow, and those are the guys that you don't need, you know, they're not on your side anyway. But everybody was basically supportive. I had a lot of friends that were willing to work for me if I needed a day off, and you know, I would even some bosses would let me use an extra half hour on my break out of my personal time to continue training if it was slow out, you know. And so, you know, I actually worked that before work and after work and during work, and then I would go home and I would sleep, I would eat, I'd take care of the stuff I had to do at home, like cleaning the pool or cutting the grass or taking the kids to Boy Scouts or whatever. So my schedule was pretty busy, and my wife was very supportive. She actually had to quit her job to really, you know, be both parents for a while because I just spent a lot of time at the gym. But it worked out for me. I was home for I lost 133 pounds in 5.5 months, or actually it was about 6 months at home. So you know, it was a lot of work, and a lot of people say, was it as hard as it looks? And I said, of course. You know, you're seeing what we're doing. It was hard. You know, I mean, I left a lot of sweat on the floor of the gym, and I was very careful about my food and my food journal, and it's a process. We just did it really fast. You don't have to lose 180 pounds in 8 months. You could lose, you know, like a lot of times people say, well, God, if we try to count calories with people, and we say, well, if you have a 2,000 calorie diet and your metabolic rate is 2,500, then that's 500 calories a day that it's a surplus. So you'll be losing at least 1 pound a week. And they say, 1 pound a week? You guys lost 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 pounds a week when you're on the ranch. And I said, well, think about it this way. 1 pound a week is 50 pounds for the year. And, you know, anybody who's over 18 can tell you how quick the years go by. So it's 50 pounds a year is a better way to look at it than 1 pound a week. But it's, you know, it's all about the numbers. Like I tell people, 2 plus 2 is always going to equal 4. I mean, if you burn more than you take in, then you're obviously going to be losing weight. So it's all a numbers game. It's just math. You know, weight loss is not hard. And a lot of people who follow me on Facebook and my brother on Twitter, and we're on MySpace and all that, which we still answer because there's a lot of international people who are still on MySpace. You know, they follow and they know that I tore my knee, my quadricep tendon, on Thanksgiving playing football with the cops and firemen. And through my struggles through the winter, I did a lot of weightlifting, but I didn't really monitor my diet as well because I wasn't on my food journal, and I gained a bit of weight. And they say, well, you know, what happened? You gained weight because you tore your knee. And I said, no, obviously I gained weight because I ate too much when I tore my knee. So it's all about what you put in your mouth. And if you could, you know, if you could prepare yourself for work and take food with you, and you know, I mean, it's preparation is all weight loss really entails, you know.
You did mention that you had that knee injury, and that you gained some weight over the winter. How are you feeling today, and how is that weight loss maintenance coming along?
I feel great. You know, I ran my second New York City Marathon in November.
Oh, great.
And it's nice because now that my knee is back, I can get back on the spin bike, I can spin hard, I can jog again. So I'm not really concerned. I just want to drop about 30 pounds through the you know, rest of the spring and the summer, and I'll be back to where I'm happy. But I'm not really that concerned because I just enlisted my my food journal again. And it's funny because this morning, I want to hear a funny story. I said, well, I'm back on my food journal, so I got my light whole wheat bread, and you know, I got my eggs out. I was going to make my regular egg white omelet, which I would usually make with a piece of whole wheat bread, and all my eggs were frozen. So I said, great, my first day in my food journal, and my eggs are frozen, so I had to run out and get some eggs because, you know, egg whites was a regular staple of my diet. And, you know, it's amazing when you learn about, you know, the best way to eat in order to remain, you know, full and not too hungry. You know, you sort of pick and choose what you eat, and it becomes pretty specific. You know, I would surely rather have. It's also much easier to track your calories if you're eating food like chicken breast or egg whites or fish that you can weigh out. You know, when you eat complex foods like lasagna or Chinese food that comes in, you know, where you can't actually monitor the calories, that's when you sort of lose track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what I'm doing now. My fitness level is pretty good. My health is pretty good. My knees are about 95% in my left knee. I had torn my right hamstring at the same time, so that's probably 95%. I can still feel it a little bit, but one of the things I started doing now is I started doing some yoga on a low level. I'm actually doing one of Bob Harper's tapes that my brother's in, one of the yoga tapes, and I realize now how unflexible I am, and my strength is excellent. I'm training for the Police Olympics in weightlifting also. I would like to do that in the upcoming year. It's actually the Police Olympics are going to be in New York, and I'd like to do a few things like bowling and ping pong, but I also want to do something athletic like running. They have the thing where you run and you weightlift at the same time. I forget what it's called. Somebody was telling me about it, but now I look forward to things that I can do which are fitness related, when before I was looking more forward to to the lazy stuff like golf and fishing.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like one of the things that you've gained is kind of how to challenge your body.
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing how much you can challenge your body. I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people say, you know, some people criticize, but other people are just surprised as to what the contestants are doing on the ranch when Jillian is screaming at them, you know, run faster, run faster. Excuse me a second, let me grab a sip.
Mm-hmm.
And, just in the last couple of days, somebody said to me, I mean, did Jillian really put you guys on a treadmill at 12 miles an hour and have you running interval sprints? And I said, well, of course, you saw it. They said, well, I mean, but was the treadmill really on 12? Well, why would they be saying the treadmill's on 12 if the treadmill wasn't really on 12? But, I mean, what they would do is they wouldn't have the cameras ready, and then Jillian would say, well, I think you could run at 12, so let's put the cameras on. You know, she knows what we can do, and we would work towards it. And if one of the girls, you know, worked up to 12, then they'd say, okay, well, now that, you know, what's-her-name is doing sprints at 12, let's get it on camera, because
mm-hmm.
everybody's going to be surprised. You know, it's something you work up to. It's not – you don't take a 360 or 375-pound guy or a 300-pound woman and stick them on the treadmill and say, okay, you know, Mark, it said go, we're going 12, you know. So it's amazing how much you could push your body when I'm down there and I'm doing chest – you know, workouts. Like what Jillian did a lot of was Jillian did a lot of complex, resistance training.
Mm-hmm.
When we, in the old days, when we learned about strength and bodybuilding and this and that, we learned about push and pull. You know, you did one day of push, which is like chest and shoulders, and the next day of pull, which is like back and biceps. Well, the way Jillian trains people is she does push and pull in the same set, and they call that, I forgot her name for it. But I found that it's amazing how well it worked for not only maintaining and sculpting your muscles, but it working right along with the keeping your heart rate up and keeping your huff factor going. And you know, she really knows her stuff, Jillian. Michael, to give her a lot of credit.
Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned what somebody was asking about recently, because one thing that I found is kind of funny is the questions, you know, that I'm asking you about, like, your weight, what are you eating, how much do you weigh, how much do you work out? That's not something that I, you know, would normally ask someone. How much do you weigh? Can you eat that? You know, have you found a lot of those really personal questions coming out of strangers or even coworkers' mouths?
Well, yeah. Well, you know what? It's funny because when, like, sometimes a coworker will say to me, you know, how much have you gained? Or, you know, I saw you on the Where Are They Now, or saw you on the show, and I said, you know what, why would you care what I weighed? Why didn't you care what I weighed when I was 360 pounds? Why are you asking me now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, are you ready? Are you doing that just to break my shoes? Or, I mean, do you really care? You know, so it's like, it's, you know, when other people ask me how much I weigh, I say, you know, I'm at a comfortable weight. I'm not positive what I weigh, because I only get on the scale once a week now. But why do you ask? In other words, if I'm 230 now, and, you know, like, it's amazing how people say, well, you know, you were too skinny when we saw you on the scale at 175. I said, yeah, but by the end of the week, when I had sort of refilled and rehydrated and stopped training for 8 hours a day, I put on 20 pounds or whatever the numbers were. You know, they say, oh, wow, you gained a lot of weight. And I say, well, it's not that I gained a lot of weight. It's that my body was ready to settle, to relax a little. You know, who trained 6 or 8 hours a day, especially for my last 16 days on that contest, which got me $100,000, were absolutely, I mean, it's crazy. I can't imagine a professional athlete or anybody else training how I trained for the last 2 weeks. And for me, it was all about, you know, hitting a number. It was all about, you know, making my mark and winning the contest and everything. I can't imagine doing that now. You know, I would have to have a heck of a really good prize at the, you know, a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for me to train as hard as I was working in my last two weeks, even my last 5 weeks back then. So I tell people, you know what, I'm at a more comfortable weight now than I was. I said, but if you ask me how much I gained from the weigh-in number, you know, it's funny because the weigh-in number and the actual number that you see on, like the number that we're at when you see us on TV are a little bit different, because, you know, when they're preparing their live television show, a lot of people know from reading stuff on the internet about the show that the scale itself is, you know, is a prop, and that they weigh us in earlier, and that's because Allison Sweeney needs. And the rest of the producers of the show and the directors of the show, they need to prepare this live television broadcast. So for the finale, we don't know what we weigh, but they know what we weigh before we get on the scale, obviously, because they have to have the numbers, they have to have the digits, they have to have all that down. So when it comes down to, you know, by the time I got home, I had put on a little weight, and then you sort of just relax your body, all your joints and everything like that, and then you find your comfort weight. So, yeah, I put on a little bit of weight, and most people do. But we got about as skinny as we could get for that. You know, one of the fellas from a previous season, I can't remember his name, but he had gotten down to like a 4% body fat. And he was so skinny, he said that just stopping the amount of training he was doing put on 15 pounds on him in the first couple of weeks, and your body just needs to have that. Because we're not competitive bodybuilders. You know, we're not professional athletes. You know, we're not training three times a day to try to maintain. You know, we're just trying to be healthy. And, you know, it's funny, my body was actually, when I put on 15 or 18 or 20 pounds in the first week or two, my body was actually more healthy. My numbers, my glycemic index, my cholesterol, everything really, you know, balanced out about 20, 25 pounds heavier than where I was for the weigh-in. But yeah, so yeah, we, you know, a lot of people manage to put on a little bit of weight, but it's all about what you can maintain with your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Now, police in many ways are uniquely challenged in their time, availability, stress, anxiety, shift work requirements, that kind of thing. Would you talk a little bit about your article, or in your article that's in the October 2010 issue of Law Enforcement Technology? Do you think that your work had an effect on your weight and your health?
Well, in my case, I worked, I worked a night shift, which is a 12-hour night from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., and I think that working nights and not having a lot of options for healthy food, you know, in the neighborhood where I work, definitely makes a difference. You really, really have to do a lot of prep work when you work nights because you don't have a supermarket where you can go and get, you know, a half a pound of low-salt turkey breast, or, you know, the restaurants aren't open where you can go in. You know, the restaurants, the places that are open at 3 o'clock in the morning is the local bodega or the local 7-Eleven where, you know, there's nothing in there that's really healthy to eat and stuff that you could, you know, you could really, you know, maintain your calorie count and your fat levels and your carbohydrate levels. So for me, one of the reasons, one of the I can't really call them excuses, but, you know, one of the reasons why I think that I got so heavy at the end was, you know, before I started my fitness journey, was because I wasn't getting enough sleep. I think that sleep is such an important part. And being so busy with the kids at home and with all the things around me, the volunteer fire department and the coaching and the scouts and the working at night and coming home and getting the kids on the school bus and helping my wife, that's definitely an issue that you have to look at. I actually know some people who lose weight because they don't know when to eat and they're never hungry because they're always tired. And, you know, it's interesting how even my father-in-law, when he became a cop at working nights, he lost 30 pounds. Other people I know, I see them just getting bigger and bigger sitting in the police car because there's not as much action during the night tour. Of course, sometimes we go crazy with action, but a lot of the times we're just on patrol and, you know, there's a lot of coffee and there's a lot of fast food that's open. It's the only thing that's open till 2 or 3 in the morning is these fast food places. So when I was when I came home and I got, you know, back to work, I would find myself bringing Ziploc bags full of food, 4 or 5 bags full that I was eating every 3 hours. And it became really easy to lose weight that way when I wasn't wondering what I was going to eat or where. I never looked at the back of a package. You know, I never, you know, had to really challenge myself in my food journal to find something that was 150 calories when I needed 150 left for the night or whatever, because I always brought, you know, the right calories with me. And if I was working a 12-hour tour and I was eating every 3 hours, I would bring at least 4 bags of food with me. They may be, it may be boiled chicken, it may be salmon, it may have some broccoli in there, it may have a little half a red, you know, skinless baked boiled potato. There may be some tuna fish with some asparagus. You know, I may have taken some hard-boiled eggs with me, but the calories were always on, and every 3 hours my watch would ring. It would take me 10 seconds to reset my watch for another 3 hours. And as soon as 3 hours hit, I'd eat another bag full of food. And after a while, your body just gets used to eating then, and I wasn't hungry. You know, it was very easy once you got the prep work out of the way. So the thing for me is it would take me an extra 20-30 minutes before I went to work to prep myself for the night ahead, and then it really wasn't that much of a problem.
Okay. One of the things that you didn't mention in the article that I wanted to ask you about is an element of police culture, you know, the brother and sisterhood sometimes involves after work drink or, you know, some sort of gathering, choir practice. How do you approach that? Do you drink at all?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because, you know, it's much bigger than most people know, that the whole social end of police work, because really I think the only people that really understand what we go through are cops and our families. And, you know, and sometimes the families don't even realize how much we need each other there when we're dealing with high stress situations.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I know that there's a lot of alcoholism. You know, there's a lot of divorce, there's a lot of suicide. There's a lot of these things that come down from having a stressful job. So the whole social end of having a couple of drinks or going sitting in a diner with your partners and talking about a situation or talking about a traumatic accident or something like that is important. And you also have to recognize when some of your friends are in trouble, you see somebody drinking too much or hurting themselves with booze or with any other of the addictions that can fall our way. But for me, you know, I'm not a big drinker. I did give up drinking completely. It's not unlike me to go out and have a beer or something like that. But I really didn't have the time to do much hanging out with the crew after work. But like I said, it's a big issue because, you know, you do need a level of decompression after work sometimes. And especially the single cops who go through a lot of stress, you find them, they do hang out a lot. You see a lot of guys drinking. You see a lot of people eating. You know, it sort of becomes their social out and their social decompression. So, you know what, it's for me, it was something that I didn't do any of. I didn't drink at all. I was always the driver. You know, for me, it became seltzer, a lot of seltzer. You know, I when I was on my plan, I really wasn't even drinking soda. I was very specific as to what I ate and what I drank. But that's definitely a big issue is drinking, because it's a lot of empty calories. Never mind the alcohol, which slows your system down. It's vasodilation also. So yeah, the whole issue of drinking too much or just drinking at all is, when people talk to me, I actually have a friend of mine in California that recently called me within the last 2 days, and he said, "Jim, I'm trying so hard to get these last 15 pounds off." So I said, "Well, you know, what are you doing?" He said, "Well, I'm watching my calories, and then I go, I have my cocktails at night, but it's like I eat well." And I said, "Well," you know, I says, "What are you drinking and how much of it, you know?" And he says, "Do I have to really give up, you know, going out and cocktailing at night?" I says, "Well, if you're counting the calories, that's fine. But if you're not, then obviously you're not going to lose weight if you're drinking 1,000 calories worth of, you know, martinis or margaritas or that type of stuff." So if that's the way you ask the question, in other words, how does you know, socializing, drinking, and eating, you know, have something to do with it? Of course it does, because it's usually just adding a lot of extra calories, never mind the fact that alcohol slows your system down, you know.
Sure. So it sounds like you're saying, though it's, you know, something that's not usually a part of your social life or after work time, as long as you're kind of keeping an eye on those calories and compensating for slowing your system down, you know, a couple drinks, you know, as always, in moderation, is
right.
Could work for you if you're, you know, looking at your health, trying to maintain or lose.
Well, I think that the more pressing issue about going out and having a cocktail or two after work is being careful that doesn't become a problem.
Okay.
I think that's more important an issue than the calories that you gain, because you don't want to fall into any addiction status. You know, a lot of people that all of us, I don't know, I can't put any words into anybody's mouth, but we, you know, I know people that say, "Well, you know, I don't have a problem. I only, you know, I only drink on weekends," and we all know those people as social drinkers and all. So if you find it happening, you know, with cops or coworkers, you know, just keep an eye on them, and just remember, if they're really your friends and you see that they're having a problem, you know, tell them. It's no different than somebody, you know, like if you if you have a friend who's obese, rather than telling them not to go up to the buffet again, you know, you're better off handing them a business card for a nutritionist and say, "Listen, I care about you. You look like you're killing yourself. I really want you to be healthy. I'm not going to tell you not to have another drink. I'm not going to tell you not to go up to the buffet again. But you know what? Maybe you need some help. And I love you, and I want you to be around, and I, you know, care about you. And here's a number for a nutritionist that I know who can probably help you." You know, I think that's a more pressing issue with cops and firemen and other shift workers, is you know, alcoholism and everything else. It's more than just a stigma. You know, it's bad. Plus, we all hear stories about people crashing their cars or getting arrested or hurting themselves or hurting other people. It's calories, sure it is. I mean, I drank a glass of wine every Monday. That was part of my high calorie day. When we were counting our calories, Jillian and the doctors and nutritionists told us how important it was to have a high-calorie day, which for us was a day where our bodies healed and our bodies caught up. And we just, every Monday, I would do very low volume of exercise. I'd do maybe an hour and a half of cardio in the morning, and then the rest of the day would be, you know, catching up on my calories and let my body rest a bit. So I would eat 50% more calories. If I was eating 2,000 calories, then normally, then on Mondays I'd have 3,000 calories. And my choice of pumping up my calories always included pizza and wine. and red wine, because that's supposed to be good for your heart and everything else too. But I always counted the calories. You know, I had 340 calories in whatever wine I was drinking. I had two slices of pizza. And by the end of the night, I would check my calorie count on my food journal. If I needed to tack on any extra calories, I'd usually have chocolate, dark chocolate. So I didn't give up absolutely completely the alcohol, but I usually just I was very, very regulated. My brother, you know, he was – we talk a lot about the difference between having things in moderation or totally abstaining. My brother talks about it in his presentation, and he says he hasn't had, you know, a beer or pasta in probably 3 years. Those are the things that gave him a lot of problems back then. He's a beer drinker, and he's married to a very good Italian cook. So she still cooks pasta every day. You know, there's still beer around the house. He still, you know, hosts and everything. But those are the two things that he's elected to abstain from because they were a problem for him before, and he doesn't want them to become a problem again. So it's not like he can have a beer or a little bit of pasta. He doesn't have any beer, any pasta, and he's done well to maintain. So I think, like I said, when you talk about drinking, those of us who socialize and who drink for decompression and who hang out with the guys afterwards and talk about stressful situations, whatever, I think we have to be more concerned about the whole alcohol end than the calorie end, because it's really easy to maintain, you know, to keep track of the calories. I mean, it's right on the bottle. You know, a Coors Light or whatever is 105 calories. You know, you can have five of them if you need more, you know, 500 more calories for your day, but guess what? Then you can't drive. You know.
Okay. I also wanted to kind of dive into a couple questions from our forum. The health and fitness section at our police forums at officer.com has thousands of questions and entries, and just our officer.com police community talking back and forth to each other. And one of the questions that was recently put up there, Big Cop 97 is talking about he's overweight, he gained some weight, ballooned up to 320 pounds, then he lost back to his old weight. But his question is, since the body is used to carrying that amount of fat for so long, does it resist the diet and do everything it can to store that amount of fat? Does something internally say, okay, you have done well getting rid of the excess, and now you're flatlining?
That's really not. How can I say it? When your body builds the fat cells, okay, you're not going to lose those fat cells. They're just going to get smaller. So you'll always have the fat cells that are there waiting to get fat again. You know, those people who are really obese, especially, you know, when you lose a lot of weight and then you start putting it back on, you find that it goes on to the fattiest spots first, like your belly and your boobs and the inside of your legs, you know, your butt. And these are the spots, obviously, that get a noticeable fattier first. You can actually dehydrate those fat cells. You can actually lose the fat out of those cells until they're almost nil, until they're almost gone. A lot of times you'll see people that lose all their weight, like even a lot of Biggest Loser contestants that have a lot of flab and have a lot of skin. Underneath those skin is just very small fat cells. And unless you get the skin cut out or you get these other forms of surgery and everything like that, they're always going to be there. So, you know, don't be surprised if you get fat in the same places that you used to get fat. In other words, your body's not going to, your fat cells aren't going to resist losing weight. It's just that you might lose weight from different areas. You know, if you're expecting the weight to come right off of your boobs and your belly, right, you know, it's going to come off your feet. It's going to come off everywhere at the same amount of time. But what will happen is that the biggest, the fattiest areas where put on weight will, they'll lose weight according to the amount of weight that those areas have to lose. It's kind of weird. I'm kind of confusing you.
No,
a little.
I think I'm following.
It's not that the body doesn't resist losing weight. It's still all about mass. It's still all about, you know, there's 3,500 calories in a pound. And if you are eating 2,000 calories and your body is burning 2,500 calories, you're always going to lose those 500 calories a day. Sometimes if you get on a scale, even us as Biggest Loser contestants, there were times where I lost 10 pounds in a week, and then the following week I lost 2 pounds. And it didn't really bother me because I kept checking my food journal. I kept checking my body bug, which tells me how many calories I'm burning. And eventually it all evened out. And by the time I lost 180 pounds, actually I was more regulating my I was following my weight loss at home. The numbers that I had were within like 3 pounds at the end when I had lost all of the rest of my weight before I went to California. I think I lost 6 or 7 pounds the last week. But I think I was plus or minus about 3 pounds. And it's funny because it depends on how much salt you eat, depends on how much fluid your body's holding. And it's funny how you find that if you have a day where you're not as active, you might hold on to water a little bit more. If you're used to sweating a lot and then you don't sweat one day, your body doesn't get rid of that water. But all in all, if you keep those numbers going, I mean, 2 plus 2 is always going to equal 4. If you keep your food journal going and you keep those calories at stable, even if you don't lose any weight this week, next week you lose twice as much. It's impossible for your body to resist. It's sort of like, if you drive a car, down to empty on the gas tank, it's not going to run. If you put a dollar in, it's only going to run for a dollar's worth. If you put $40 in, it'll run for $40 worth. Your body burns a certain amount always. There are certain things which help you burn a little bit faster, certain thermogenics, certain exercises, overheating yourself like wearing a sauna suit or doing a lot of workout in the Bikram yoga or a hot room like a sauna. These things help you burn a little bit faster because your body is trying to keep itself cool, so it actually becomes a little more of a thermal like furnace. But all in all, and generally speaking, your body is always going to burn pretty much the same thing. So, by saying that your fat resists losing, no, that's not true. That's not true. You have to. It's a long term thing. You're not going to lose, 25 pounds, in 2 days. You're going to lose a pound a day. Like my goal was to lose a pound a day. So I followed my calorie count at 2,000, and I tried to get my calorie burn up to 5,500, which is a lot of calories to burn. For me, jogging in the street or running, long distance was my biggest calorie burn. I could lose 1,000 calories in an hour of running 5 miles, Mm-hmm. But somebody like that, what happens with a guy that's 320 pounds is you start to lose weight. As a matter of fact, what a lot of people don't realize is as you're losing weight, your fatty areas get softer. They get softer before they get smaller. It's like you get flabbier before you get thinner because all those fat cells that are really expanded now, full of fat and fluids and water, they start to lose that fluid and water, and so they get softer and they get flabbier. And a lot of people say, wow, I'm on a diet and look how flabby I am. Well, that's good. It's good to get flabby when you're losing weight, because after flabby, then it starts getting smaller. But it has to go somewhere first. It's sort of like if you have one of these big exercise balls in the gym, those big ones that you lay on and you do your sit-ups and stuff on. That thing, you're supposed to do it really hard. And if you let air out of it, even like a basketball, well, not really. Basketball doesn't really get smaller, but I remember seeing those things, and you have to actually feel them to see how hard they are, because they get soft before they get small, and usually the same size, and that's a good way to look at weight loss. So for that guy who's 320 pounds, just stay on your calorie count. I don't even call it a diet anymore. I just call it a way of life. Stay on your low calorie count. Keep track of it. Don't forget to monitor your fluids too, because if you drink a Coke at 280 calories, but don't forget if you also have a 5 cups of coffee, you got 40 calories of milk in that coffee usually too. That's an extra 200 calories. A lot of people keep their food journal, but don't keep what their liquid intake is, because it's not food. Well, yes, it is. It's calories. So just stay on that food journal. Keep your calorie counts stable, and you'll always, always lose the weight, because it's only math.
Okay. I think we have maybe time for one more question. This one is from Yin 6 Yang 9. It looks like this individual is getting ready for an agency obstacle course. Let's see here. Let me get to the meat of it. I have no upper body strength, and I'm 5'4". I have trouble with pull-ups. Is there any advice on how to build upper body strength for the obstacle wall in the course?
Okay, my answer to that is speak to your personal trainer. Okay? What that question says, how do I build my upper body strength so I can do pull-ups?
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do is you have to go to the gym or you have to get a pull-up bar and you have to do it. You know, you have to actually do it. You have to build up the strength by doing the exercise. You know, for me, one of the plans that I have a lot of friends that have not only competed in but market the whole P90X plan, and that's not a Biggest Loser plan, but it's so funny because one of the things that P90X asks you to do is to have a what they call the iron gym, which is a pull-up bar that clips to your door, in your doorway. And in the P90X plan, it says if you can't do a pull-up, then what you got to do is you put a chair in front of you or a chair underneath you, and you assist yourself on pull-ups,
mm-hmm.
and you try to you know, to hang, you know, you help yourself pulling up, and then you try to let yourself go down really slowly. That's called negative. When you're, even like when you're bench pressing, if you have somebody help you up to the up point, and then bring it down slowly back to your chest by yourself as slow as you can, that negative actually helps you get stronger. So what you have to do to build up your strength in pull-ups is you have to actually do the exercise. But if you get the Iron Gym, one of these other pull-up type bars that goes into your house, it will explain to you how to do assisted pull-ups. And then before you know it, you'll build up the strength and be able to do one or two. If you have somebody that can help you do more, then obviously that's the way to do it. The way to build up strength is usually low reps, high weight. So if you're trying to build size, the general rule is to do 10 to 15 reps of an exercise till exhaustion for 4 to 5 sets after one set of warming up. If you're trying to build strength, then the general rule of thumb is low reps. It's 6 to 8 reps till exhaustion with heavier weight, and you pyramid down in reps, up in weight. That's how you get stronger. But like I said, what he should do is he should speak to his personal trainer, or enlist the help of an online personal trainer that he may be able to give him some idea as to a good general workout. In other words, how many reps, how many sets. For me, I'm not a personal trainer, but I'm just giving you general rules of thumb. But the best thing to do is to speak to a professional.
Now, I understand you also wrote an online book with your brother?
Yes, we have an e-book that's available on truthaboutdiets.com. That's truthaboutdiets.com. We actually started an online contest, and we did, I don't know, a lot of little video snippets, 2 or 3 minutes long, showing you guys how to do the exercises that we did. You know, spinning, certain things. You know, we did some punching. We did some core work, some planks, some different exercises for weights and resistance curls. You know, we did arms and shoulders and back and all that stuff. Truth About Diets is a lot of information as to what we learned. We're actually putting together a book book now that we're trying to, we're going to try to market a hard book. But like I said, our ebook is pretty good. The only thing that we don't include in our ebook was our journals and our diaries about the actual experience at The Biggest Loser. We're saving that for our regular book.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what people really wanted at Truth About Diets was exactly, what we did and how we did it and how we managed to figure out how many calories we needed. And it's not that hard, guys. You could do it online. If you go to Google either BMR, like basal metabolic rate, or RMR, resting metabolic rate calculator, then it'll come up. There's many of them online, and it'll ask you for certain measurements, your age, your height, your weight, certain measurements of your body. And that will usually tell you, generally speaking, approximately how many calories you're burning just being awake all day. Mine was 2690 when I was in California with all the million-dollar tests. And when I did it online for free, it was 2640. So it was pretty close. It was 50 away, which is, half a diet yogurt, So it's not that was close enough.
Mm-hmm.
It actually enabled me to make my calorie count for most of my experience, 2,000 a day. Now my calorie count's 1,800 a day because I'm not training as much and I don't expect to lose 10 pounds a week. If you can lose 3-4 pounds a week, be very, very happy. When people lose 3 pounds a week or 4 pounds a week on The Biggest Loser and they're furious, that's because they're training all day. We didn't do anything out there except for train, sleep, and eat. There was no TVs. There was no kids screaming. There was no drive me to baseball. There was no I got to get to school. Can you wake up out of bed and drive me? It's raining. And there was none of that. All it was, there was no TVs, no computers, no telephones. We all we did was train and eat. When you're at home, you can't do that. So if you could lose, you know, 3 or 4, even 2 pounds a week, you know, just think about the fact that, don't think of it as 2 pounds a week. Think of it as 8 pounds a month or 10 pounds a month. And 6 months from now, you'll be 60 pounds lighter. And just, you know, one of the most important things that I did, which I just did again now after finally getting my health back where I can train again, is I took the same fat picture of myself that I left on the refrigerator, right by the refrigerator door.
Mm-hmm.
I put that on the door, and that's a good thing to do. Take a really, really ugly, truthful picture of yourself that you really hate to look at, and before you know it, you know, that person will be gone. And I promise you, it hurts to look at that picture, but it'll be so, you'll be amazed as to how you look at that picture down the road when you find your fitness and you find the person that you really are inside, and you say, wow, you know, what got me there, and I don't want to get back there again, you know. Believe me, and those of you who may be overweight but still happy with yourself like I was, I always thought I felt good until I really started feeling good. You know, I used to think that everybody has to stop at the top of the stairs, you know, if you're climbing up 3 flights of stairs with your equipment on. I mean, you got your equipment on, right? That's 30 or 40 pounds of equipment. Well, you know what? After a while, when you lose 50 or 60 or 100, 180 pounds like I lost, and figure maybe even if I'm 120 pounds now, if I put on 50 or 60 pounds, you know, for those people who are 300 plus pounds, 50 pounds doesn't seem like a lot. If you're 140 pound, you know, marathon runner, and you say, wow, I could never put on 50 pounds, well, lucky you. But somebody who's upwards in weight, I tell people say, oh, I wish I could gain 10 pounds, and I say I can gain 10 pounds in a weekend. So it all depends on how you hold the weight and how you metabolize and your genetics. Very often people will say to me, I have thyroid problem or I have slow metabolism, and the answer to that is, sorry, dude, you got to eat less.
Mm-hmm.
If you have slower genetics than your buddy who eats 3 pizzas a day, you got to eat less. But if you put a positive spin on it and you say, hey, guess what, it'll cost me less at the supermarket, that's a good way to look at it. But put that picture of yourself on the fridge and just get started. Talk to your doctor, talk to your nutritionist. Check out our website at truthaboutdiets.com. It's a great plan. Our ebook is really pretty comprehensive. But you gotta sweat it off. You gotta leave it in the gym and literally leave your ass on the floor of that gym in
mm-hmm.
the form of sweat. And sorry, but it's, you know, I mean, everybody watches the show, and Jillian would scream and yell that too. You know, leave it in the gym, and it'll work. It's just like math. Watch your calories and do some training.
Well, I think that concludes it. I didn't have anything else to ask, unless you had something you wanted to add.
Desiree, there's one thing I want to add. Our corporate motto, as you could say, for me and Bill, you know, his slogan was he wanted to become half the man so he could be twice the man. Well, our motto is no more excuses. So when you think about all the things that you do, and you say you don't have time to give yourself some time to train, think about sitting in the paper in the kitchen reading the paper in the morning, drinking your coffee. If that's something you do every day, and you don't think that's wasting time, try doing it on the treadmill. Try doing it on a bicycle, on a spin bike. On the elliptical trainer. You could have a cup of coffee on the elliptical. You could read the paper. You could watch the news. Find time for yourself and be selfish, because even though you might think that it's not good to be selfish for yourself, if you think that you want to stay and see your kids, you know, have kids and walk your daughter down the aisle, be selfish now, because that's what's going to keep you here later. There are no more excuses. Just get it done. And if you need any help, we're here to help you.
Okay. Thanks so much, Jim. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
You're welcome.